All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome to the Pro to Pro Hour with Marta Vitarello.
Good morning, Joseph. How are you today?
I am fantastic.
It's such a nice day out.
It is beautiful. A beautiful day, especially for rebroadcast in about 5 months, depending upon when they're hearing this. But every day is a beautiful day with Marta in the studio.
And so sweet. Well, I always pay him. Yeah. You know, like he always gets that little under.
Check is in the mail.
Check is in the mail.
We've got
sound nice.
That should be the name of your next show. Every day is a beautiful day with Marta.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I like that. We went through a lot of names also that we changed across the board, and all of them. One of them had my name in it and my picture. That ruined that picture right away.
It was Marlin Company.
Marlin Company.
That was, it sounded like Three's Company.
It was great. I loved that. But at one point, I was in the equation. I'm like, get me out of the equation. The ratings skyrocketed as soon as that happened. But we've got a great show today and some good friends in the room. One of them who I've done many shows with and who I've known since we were young and who's a fantastic attorney. Marla, if you will, before we introduce our guests, today's day, this is, I know you wanted to talk about this. It's an emotional week here, and we're going to talk obviously about 9/11 and a lot of the things that are going on. We're going to bring our guests in, but it certainly is a time worth the 20-year anniversary that. I mean, we all remember where we were, and we'll talk about that when we bring the guests in. But on an annual basis, when it's this time of year,
right?
What are your sentiments?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I think every one of us remember exactly where we were. I was still working as a nurse in a cardiology practice, and there was patients in the waiting room, and I just remember people screaming in the waiting room, like watching the TV because we had a TV in there. And I came running out and I saw people just like in shock and awe.
Yeah.
And it was just like such a dreary, they closed the office up, everybody left, we canceled everything, even for the following day until, everybody was so nervous. Call me when you get to this point.
Yeah.
Don't drive over the bridge because, nobody knew where the threats were or anything. So I just think that it is a lasting impression, and to even know it's down in history where our kids right now are learning about the towers and how that all happened, and it's a part of our American history. It is so sad when I think about and I see the posts that go on. There was one post on LinkedIn that really touched my heart last night, and it was about how so many firefighters, so many police officers, so many first responders, nurses, and workers, employees in those buildings went to bed tomorrow night, a normal night, like thinking like, hey, kissing their families goodbye for the day. And then, that was the last time that anyone was going to see. And it really, I have the chill, my hair standing up right now in my arms that I'm like thinking about this because we can't take every day for granted.
Absolutely. And we're going to dig into that discussion even further. And certainly I'm ecstatic to bring into the broadcast our guests. We have a fantastic panel here.
On a much lighter note, by the way, there's a lot of estrogen in this room. Are you feeling it?
I'm outnumbered.
I'm just saying.
I'm feeling fantastic. I'm outnumbered at home, and it's only 1-1, believe me. So I'm used to, being the lone ranger in the room. But having said that, Karen O'Donnell, Stark and Stark is in the house. That's number one. So there we go. I'm gonna bring in my good friend, Karen O'Donnell. How are you, Karen?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me again. So appreciate it.
It's certainly our pleasure. And we have a fantastic, you have a fantastic guest, Deborah Dunn, who's an attorney at Stark & Stark. How are you, Deborah?
Thank you. I'm great. Thank you for having me, too. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. And so we're gonna talk about the fantastic job you guys do for your clients and everything that that you do for the individuals that you represent. But before we do, let's have this 9/11 conversation because it's the 20th anniversary, and we all remember where we were. Deborah, where were you?
I was at Mercer County Superior Court clerking for Judge Thomas Kelly, and I was at my desk, and my mother-in-law called and said, "Did you hear what happened?" She wasn't my mother-in-law yet. she said, "Did you hear? Did you hear?" And I said, "Hear what?" And I thought somebody, you know, in our family, something had happened and it was on the news or something crazy, because that wouldn't be the first time. So she told me what happened, and I remember going in. I didn't know what to do, because the judge was on the bench with a full courtroom of people. Wow. So I thought, not only did he need to know, but the people needed to know, because they might have, you know,
loved
ones there. So I went out and I slipped him a note. And the note was simply, you know, there's been an attack and a plane went through the tower. And he turned around and looked at me and said, "What do you want me to do?" And I slipped him another note. "I think you should come out and let's talk." Right. And or something like that. But it was back and forth. And finally, about a half an hour went by, and we all kind of reconvened in the back and left for the day.
Well, when that second plane, not to interrupt you real quick, but in the beginning, just to capture that moment that you're speaking of, no one really knew yet what it was.
Yeah.
So that first plane was like shock. Oh, my God, it must have been a, you know, power failure, or, you know, something happened with the pilot, or they tried to emergency land. Something happened on the plane. So that first, when, how long after what was it, 15, 20 minutes?
Yeah, 11 minutes.
Somewhere 11 minutes. Okay. So when that second plane hit, that's when everybody knew.
Yeah.
So I remember that moment. Even more so, just feeling the drain, like, holy crap, we're under attack.
Cameron, your experience?
I was just going to add, you know, like Marla was saying, I think it was just that feeling of disbelief and not knowing what was going on. I actually was in the car going to work, or heading from something, going to work, and I remember I was listening to Howard Stern at the time.
By the way, one of the best coverages on the whole that entire experience, Howard Stern, once he focused and knew what was going on. But I hear you.
And I remember getting to work, and at that point, you know, all we had was the radio, and I was listening to Howard Stern, and it was just that disbelief when it turned into, you know, we don't know what's going on, to this is an attack on our country.
That's right.
You know, at that point, you just felt so helpless. I mean, you know, my family members are down in Philly
Center
here.
City.
Doing construction.
On high-rise buildings.
Where they're in office buildings and high-rise buildings, and you're trying to get a hold of them. And I remember all the lines. You couldn't even call from here, you know, any of your loved ones, because all the lines, you know, were busy because
the cell phone towers were affected.
And you know what's interesting? Deborah, when you said you would talk to the judge and you handed him a note, it reminded me immediately of when I think it was a Secret Service person gave President Bush the note when he was reading to the kids.
Yeah.
Now, politics
aside,
completely, man. Having said that, we talked about this on a prior broadcast. My God, you can see it. I have chills when you look at his face when he saw that. And you saw he just went blank and started to be like, what's going on? Now he's reading the kids.
Yeah.
Okay, he's got to make. And you knew America was under attack. I thought, I was at Finnegan's Wake in the office. We were opening up our first nightclub, and we were, you know, just going over some zoning stuff. And I remember Dennis Brennan, who's a relative of mine, who was a manager there, said they had a TV in the office, and it was in the morning. And so he said a plane just hit the one of the Twin Towers. I thought, of course, it had to be a small plane, you know, some small plane hit the tower.
Like
just
a helicopter,
like,
almost, like it was, you know, a
baseball player, one of the major leaguers, I think a couple of years before that, you know, accidentally flew his plane into a high rise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you see, then the second one. And my wife worked in Center City, and my son, of course, all of our family works in Center City also, but my son went to Roman Catholic High School. And he's taking the L home, and L's right by City by City Hall.
Yeah,
I mean,
scary.
All heck broke loose.
Yeah.
And so you know, just going through that experience was so, and the city was. I mean,
and
you
the
could,
Pentagon it, after that.
Oh, the
and
Pentagon
it was like, oh my
and
God, so
Shanksville. I mean,
at that point, the paranoia sets in because
Absolutely.
You don't know, is it going to be a bridge? Is it going to be, you know, a sports stadium? Is every place that we went to after that? You're like, you don't know when the next attack is. And funny thing is, the guy I was seeing at the time, who is now my husband, 20
that
years
guy,
ago, that,
that
was the year we met, right? That guy. you know, he came in to meet me for lunch. And I remember saying, like, we have to leave. Like, it was, you know, he walked into the office. So he actually had to go up north because he had an appointment on September 11th for something.
Yeah.
So he's driving up the turnpike, and he's like, I could see it because his family house was in West Orange. So you could see the New York skyline
on a
clear day, and it was a clear day that day.
Yeah, no question about it.
He said, I smelled the smoke as he was driving up from the turnpike. I smelled the smoke coming through the exhaust in my car. So driving up, and he, you know, this is the first time you see a guy like kind of, you know, he's like almost driving into the fire because he had to go there too.
Yeah.
And he knew people that were, you know, that lost lives and family members that have lost their life.
It's amazing though afterwards how everybody's just awareness and perception change. I mean, how many times before 9/11 would you be in a office building and the fire alarm goes off and people were not eager to get out, or they stayed? You know, and then after 9/11, everybody is exiting that.
I mean, you knew when you were watching on TV, and we were all glued to it once we got to it, that America, that it had changed. One of the things that you remember is that we were so united. It was amazing. And obviously these have been divided times, but hopefully people remember that they were stronger together. Having said that, when I watch, of course we all, you're going to see a lot of them on TV. I mean, and what do you, when you're watching those videos now, when you're watching the, it's hard for me to watch because you know it's coming.
Yeah, it brings me to
tears.
It's heart-wrenching.
It brings you right back.
And you hear the recordings of
the
people.
Please.
Yeah. I mean, I cry every time.
Yeah.
I mean, not a year
audio
goes by.
Is the worst.
Yeah.
And when you hear those tapings and the recordings of people that were on the planes with their last and final messages to their family members, it is just heart-wrenching. It is just absolutely heart-wrenching.
I mean, and you think about
trapped under their
rubble. And the thing is, you see the towers, you know what's going to happen now. You know what I mean? And I remember when the towers fell, it was they didn't know what was going on at first. There's so much smoke. You're like, what just happened? Did that just happen?
Mm-hmm.
And the tributes, if you watch any of the sports stations now, okay, you see the Yankees and I tell you, and I say this, I'm a lifelong Democrat and a labor Democrat, as you know. So having said that, when Bush went out there on that mound and threw that pitch, it was the greatest pitch ever thrown under the most pressure. I mean, it was a strike like there was never one. And that story he tells about Derek Jeter, when he walks in, they were under the stadium, and Jeter walks in, he goes, you're going to stand on the rubber? He goes, you better stand on the rubber, they're going to boo. And he said, you think I should? And he said, yeah. And as he's walking out, Jeter says, don't bounce it, right? They're going to boo again.
Right.
Now, it was, in my opinion, the greatest pitch ever thrown.
Mm-hmm.
And I get emotional just watching it. He was amazing during that time. And, of course, I had and I'm actually doing a podcast on it later today. Or not the entire thing, but a friend of mine who I went to Penn Charter with when I was a freshman, whose uncle was a business agent at 401, Pete McDonough. His nephew, Peter Rotowie, lost his life in 9/11. He was an All-American. He went lacrosse player at Duke. He worked for one of the big brokerage firms, and he was a mecca of person. I knew him since my freshman year at Penn Charter, and so it's just a difficult. I mean, to say difficult is the understatement of the century.
Yeah.
But you know,
I think the hardest
forget.
Yeah, you never forget. And the thing is it's more difficult now that I have children, sort of understanding and trying to make them understand.
Yeah.
What their thought process is. So it creates a fear that we don't really know how real that fear needs to be at this time. So for example, the first thing they started implementing is, you know, the
airports.
No, the lockdowns, the school lockdowns, and hide under your desk. And I remember they started doing this in grade schools and high schools shortly after, I don't know which year they implemented it. I'm sure right after 9/11. But that they would do these drills, these lockdown drills, where all the doors, if they thought we were under threat, because then like random people, I don't remember the years, don't quote me on the history part, but random people were shooting schools.
It was
all this crazy stuff starting to happen. And I remember having my kids at Goddard School, and Santino was about 2 or 3 years old. And we walked in to Goddard School, you would just open up the door and walk right in. You
know, those days are over.
Yeah. The following week, they had bulletproof glass, locks on every door. And I remember walking in saying to myself, so obviously this was years later because I had kids, but I remember just walking in and saying, what a different world we're living in right now. How fearful, why our poor kids are trying to go to school and be educated and have a normal childhood. And, you know, hearing a story of my daughter, she said, Mom, this breaks my heart. It actually brings tears to my eyes. They did a lockdown in the school, and her girlfriend had to stand on a toilet and couldn't have their feet shown. And she said, Mom, I was so scared. I started to giggle. She said, and we were covering each other's mouths. She said, because if the bad guys heard us, like the thought of this, and she was five, she was in kindergarten.
It was a different world.
Oh, different world.
I mean, you know, certainly we could have never imagined, you know, going on planes and going through,
Do you think this stuff happened to, I mean, not obviously not 9/11 things, but do you think that a lot of these things are just more apparent because of social media, because we now have a full video camera and phone, you know, video and ability to take pictures on our phone that we carry with us all the time? Back in the day, we had to carry those big VHS, you know, the ones you lugged over your shoulder to actually capture footage. And I feel like some of this is probably the worst thing.
So do your parents talk to you about drills from when they were kids? My mother talks about that all the time during the Cold War.
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like it's reminiscent of that. Mm-hmm. Although
that's a good point.
We're now, you know, obviously in a much different place than we were when we were kids. And I feel like it's only getting, you know, security is getting tighter. It has to be.
Right. Yeah. And which that's the benefit, too.
Yeah.
The cameras, all the surveillance now. And, you know,
that's the blessing and the curse of social media. Now,
right.
Yeah. We're all more aware because we get to see it. But, you know, there's lessons to be learned. Like, I don't think our children would understand how compelling that day was if it wasn't for social media, because they can see the videos and hear the audios.
That's true.
It
hits home.
I mean, it was like, obviously, you know, being in the middle of a movie. It was. And then we had so many guys from the local, from Ironworkers Local 401, going to New York to help out and to do it. I mean, the union guys, and from all the unions, just flocking. What can we do?
Right. Yeah.
Like, you know,
I think that is what you said earlier, that we were one as a country and everybody worked together. And there was this sentiment that just kind of just resonated.
Oh, my God. I mean, you know, those sports games when Mike Piazza hit the home run. I mean, none of us, anybody from North Jersey here besides your husband? who's
Please.
No.
Okay. So my point is, you know, listen, none of us were ever, you know, Mets fans or anything. But man, that day, I mean, that World Series, I wanted to see the Yankees win it all. Mm-hmm. Like, they didn't. That was the one time they didn't. They just won three in a row. But, I mean, it was an emotional time. It's certainly obviously important for us to remember and to share the experience with everybody. We're gonna go to a short break, and we're going to talk a little law when we come back. You're gonna more from the Pro to Pro Hour at Marlon Vittorillo after the break.
Suffering a work injury or a personal injury can be a very traumatizing experience, particularly when your local pharmacy refuses to fill your prescriptions. This won't happen with Synergy Pharmacy. Synergy Pharmacy is a workers' compensation and personal injury pharmacy focused on providing high-quality physician-prescribed medications to injured individuals, even if the case is in litigation. Synergy Pharmacy works on behalf of their clients to get their medications quickly processed and delivered directly to their homes within 24 to 48 hours, and there are no out-of-pocket costs to the patient. Synergy Pharmacy is a family-owned pharmacy that cares about injured workers and those suffering from personal injuries such as motor vehicles or other types of injuries. At Synergy Pharmacy, the patient comes first. That's Synergy Pharmacy at www.synergyscripts.com. That's synergyscripts.com. Call 484-328-4700.
Here's an important message for all first responders, tow truck operators, and anyone who works on Pennsylvania roadways. Every day, emergency responders just like you are struck by vehicles while working on the road. Some don't survive, others are critically injured and can never go back to the jobs they love. Lives are changed forever in a matter of seconds. Today's drivers are more distracted than ever before and often don't see responders working on the road until it's too late. In 2020, emergency responders and other highway workers are being struck and killed at least once every 7 days. Remember, you can't help anyone if you become a victim yourself. Get trained in traffic incident management and learn how to survive. It's free of charge, and it's waiting for you now. Work safely, stay alert, and stay alive. Your family, friends, colleagues, and the public you serve need you. This message is brought to you by Penntime and Beasley Media Group. Learn more about Pennsylvania traffic incident management training at penntime.com.
Women Heart is in a race to save lives. Heart disease is the number one killer of women. It's 80% preventable if you know the facts. Millions of women are living with or at risk of different types of heart disease, like AFib, which is a type of irregular heartbeat. It affects both women and men, but women with AFib have a higher risk of stroke and death than men. Get educated. See your doctor. Know the facts. Diet and exercise are key to staying healthy. Know the risks. Women Heart does something really unique, solely focusing on women and providing peer-to-peer support. To win this race, we all have to do it together. Our hearts beat as one. To learn more, visit womenheart.org.
Hi, I'm Marcus Scribner. The way we treat others affects us all, and that includes the way we treat animals. Cruel treatment of animals overseas led to the pandemic crisis, killing 1 million people worldwide. Environmental destruction, pollution, and poaching have killed endangered wild species. Our world today is a poorer place for people to live and inhumane for both people and animals. To fight back, American Humane created a 10-point plan to help animals, people, and the world we share. From ending the dog and cat meat trade to universal humane standards for farms, zoos, entertainment, and animal transport. Together we can make a difference. Join the fight for our animal friends. Go to AmericanHumane.org today and sign our new deal for animals. For a kinder, safer, and healthier world for all of us.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Proto Pro Hour. Marvin Vittorello. We're sponsored by Synergy Pharmacy. We've got a great show. Marvin's guests are Karen O'Donnell of Stark & Stark and Deborah Dunn of Stark & Stark. And
these ladies are powerhouses.
That's right. We got Stark & Stark in the house. But we already knew that. having said that, Karen, before we move on to to discuss some legal stuff, you had something you wanted to finish up on in regards to 9/11.
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone that there is a Garden of Reflection in the Yardley area. And tonight there's a fundraiser in Yardley at the American Legion. And Stark & Stark is actually one of the sponsors of the fundraiser. But we're supporting the Garden of Reflection and the fund to maintain that garden so that we do never forget.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because if you've ever been in New York, the reflection, it's at the Reflection Pond or whatever. I mean, it's the monument they have there, and just the whole memorial situation.
It's moving,
but it's great to hear that in Yardley, okay, and in a lot of areas throughout the country that we have that because, there was never a doubt that anybody who was there would not forget. But we need to obviously not only pay homage but make sure that our children, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. That our children never forget. So it's tonight in Yardley. What time?
Oh, it's from 6 to 9 at the American Legion, and we're just doing a quick Quizno night. But if you want to show up, all the money's going to the Garden of Reflection to help maintain that, in years to come.
Okay,
that's awesome.
Fantastic.
Yeah, well, I think the most important thing, just to tie into what Karen is talking about in this fundraiser about not letting people forget is a very positive thing, because when we go on our days, day to day, we wake up, we brush our teeth, we get ready for work, our children are there, we send them off to school. These women and men no longer have a spouse, no longer have a parent, no longer have, so their day is totally different as impacted by that one day 20 years ago.
No question about it.
You know, and we do kind of forget. I mean, there are days, like, we don't think about it every single day, but those families live it every single day.
Of course. You know? And you know, certainly this is our time to make sure they know that we always support them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so having said that, Karen, if you will, remind our listeners a little bit about yourself and Stark & Stark.
Yeah, so I'm Karen O'Donnell. I'm a partner at Stark & Stark, and Deb is as well. I'm in the Pennsylvania office, so I'm down here in Philly and in the surrounding counties, but I'm a trial lawyer, and I handle catastrophic accidents, mostly construction accidents, and we're developing more of a sexual assault practice as well, so yeah. Which unfortunately has become really prominent.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, people don't realize in many cases. I didn't at first, because I've done several shows on it, that it's a personal injury. That in many cases, obviously, that, you know, there's a civil side to it,
right,
as well as a criminal side.
Mm-hmm.
Those are incredibly emotional.
I was actually going to ask, so my thought and perception of what sexual assault is may be different from, you know, woman versus man, no offense, Joe. You know, I'm just thinking we all have different perceptions of sex and et cetera. But can you explain a little bit to our listeners about what actually qualifies as an assault?
So any really offensive touching, there's a definition in the law of what it is. But, mm-hmm. You know, kind of circling it back to civil versus criminal. So we're civil attorneys. So, you know, we seek to get people compensation for the harm that they've suffered, where the criminal end seeks to, like, punish the perpetrator. So, you know, Joe said not all the time do people realize there's a civil end of it. And unfortunately, sometimes there isn't a civil end of it. And that's kind of when somebody calls me and says, hey, I've been, you know, sexually assaulted by, you know, a parent, for example. You know, that may not be a civil case because, you know, we look to insurance. So we look to, like, facilities and hospitals,
right,
and hotels and
negligent security in a dark area.
Right. So, you know, people call and they're like, I want to sue them civilly. And sometimes we have to say, you know, that's not a case that we can pursue. And it's just so heartbreaking because you want so badly to help everyone. That's what we do. That's why we do this.
You think that will change?
I don't think so. I think that's why we have a criminal end of things and a civil end of things.
It's like, you know, the Glenn Mills School, the Boy Scouts, the Catholic Church. Those are institutions that made it possible, that were negligent in leaving children unprotected, or individuals. And we'll get back to that, because that's such a powerful conversation. Believe me, you know, that you talk about, you know, emotional at that point. So I really admire what you guys do in that particular area. Your personal injury and workers' compensation. So you handle work injuries. Talk about, you know, the list of types of other personal injuries and that you handle.
Yeah. So as I said, I generally do the catastrophic stuff. So. But in the construction field, Joe, as you know, coming from the union background, my whole family's union, and I personally like that. Like, I like climbing on equipment. I like going up, you know, 10 stories to figure out what happened.
No, right, but
you know, that's kind of where I come from.
Little background: Karen's father and my father were union officials at Iron Workers Local 401 for years.
Oh, cool.
Your brother Larry. Who's a great iron worker, but also catastrophically injured, to say the least.
Yeah, so
there are no basic. I mean, there's some, but what you're talking about is really, you know, when you're an iron worker and big, heavy construction, union construction, there are, we pull our backs out on occasion, but they have a tendency to be catastrophic, major injuries.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and Joe, going back, you know, I think I've shared on the air before, you know, that's kind of what put me into, you know, doing what I do in terms of construction accidents, because my brother was hurt and I wasn't in law school yet, but, you know, it was a defective bolt and, he almost lost his leg. His leg's like 3 inches shorter than his other one right now, but watching how he went through that process and what our family went through, it doesn't just affect that person. It affects a whole family.
Oh,
and, you know, kind of circling back to 9/11, you know, people lost their lives, but people's lives can be changed by injuries as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they go to work one day, and that day something happens, and their whole life has changed. It's totally different than the day before. And, you know, that's why Deb and I do what we do, because, you know, we do our best to try to get them money and compensation so that they can bring their lives back to where they were, to the best that they can, before they got hurt. You know, whether that's getting equipment to fix their house so that they can function better, whether that's, you know, money to help them with future medical care. Like, that's why we do what we do.
Absolutely.
Amazing.
Deb, if you would tell our listeners a little bit about what you do. I know you practice in Jersey, correct?
I do. I'm a South Jersey girl. So I live in South Jersey and practice in out of our Marlton office. I do represent people throughout the state, though. I handle motorcycle crashes, slip and fall incidents, truck accidents, car accidents, the whole gamut.
And having said that, there are, you know, the laws are different in Jersey, obviously, than they are in PA, which is, I mean, if we start getting into that conversation.
Work comp is so different.
Well, work comp especially, but when you're talking about the different type, you know, insurance policies, I watch. Mm-hmm. So we'll be watching the Eagles game, or mm-hmm. We'll watch the NFL opens up tonight. So having said that, the two types of commercials that you see all the time are, you know, autoimmune disease medications, number one, right? We all get that, right? Mm-hmm. Phil Mickelson and all that, Humira and all that stuff, but also insurance companies, okay? Yeah. I'm sure it ticks you off when you hear, we're only going to get you what you need.
It sure does. So one of the things that Karen said earlier was with a lot of the sexual assault cases, sometimes there just isn't insurance coverage. That's similar with auto policies and motorcycle policies as well. Sometimes you get people that are really catastrophically injured, and, you know, maybe there's a $15,000 policy from the person that hurt them, or maybe the person that hurt them is not insured at all.
And that's it, right? And so, and they think that they got a lawsuit, mm-hmm. okay? But they and how many people think they have full coverage?
Everyone says to me, "I have full coverage. Don't worry about it."
Okay, yeah, and I'm gonna
full coverage is not full tort in Pennsylvania.
Right, we know that,
right?
And then your next question is, well, let's see your policy.
Exactly.
You should do
what I do, because right. you know what to do.
I've heard it from having individuals like yourself on. But what is the difference? Between full coverage, well, not full coverage. Full coverage is a term that talks about the body of your car, not your health.
Right.
But talk about limited tort and full tort.
So not only is there the difference with limited tort and full tort, but there's the amount of insurance that everybody has on their insurance policy. You know, what is your leg worth, or what is your a broken arm worth? You know, some people think they have full coverage and they only have $15,000 in underinsured motorist coverage. If you have $15,000 in underinsured coverage, you're not protecting yourself, nor are you protecting other people in the event that you hit them. That's a whole nother story. So limited tort means that you give up your right to sue if you have... if you're injured in a crash, you give up your right to sue unless you have one of five injuries. So there's different categories, and most of the categories or most people's injuries fall within the catch-all, which is a permanent injury. Some people think when they hear, oh, a permanent injury, well, that must mean I have to, you know, be in a wheelchair or lose an arm. That's not necessarily it, but there is a number of things that we have to prove, hurdles we have to jump through if you give away your right to sue in all instances.
And Deb, is it called the limited tort in New Jersey?
Verbal threshold is what we call it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So,
which is, I mean, you know, it's being an attorney and understanding both sides of the river when it comes to this is you know, and if you have limited tort in Philly, but you get hit by somebody in Jersey, it becomes
it becomes
full tort or something.
Yeah.
But it's we're thankful, obviously, that we have attorneys like yourself that represent people. Talk about what is PIP.
So PIP is personal injury protection benefits. PIP is what you have on your own policy in New Jersey anyway. It's what you have on your own policy to pay for medical benefits in the event you're injured in a car crash. So a lot of people don't realize that they have that as well. And some people get annoyed. You know, why am I going to go through my car insurance? I don't want to hit my car insurance again because I have health insurance. But technically you get better coverage and it makes more sense to go through your auto policy in the event you're hurt in a crash.
So in PA, it's the minimum PIP is $5,000, right?
Yep.
In Jersey, it's
Jersey, most people have $250,000 in PIP, but you can have a lower PIP policy.
But it's from what I understand, they make it much more difficult. I think how's that?
Because people do.
Yeah, talk about
they
that for
the
a second.
Carrot in Jersey.
Yeah.
So in New Jersey, we have the doctors generally will bill to PIP, right? So your client goes to different doctors. The doctors know that in order to get paid, in order to treat you, obviously they want to get paid, they have to bill PIP. So PIP has care paths that you have to go through. So you have to, the doctor has to treat you conservatively first, unless there's some kind of flag, you know, pain that turns into, you know, nerve pain, then maybe they'll allow you to get an MRI earlier. Otherwise, you generally have to wait 3 months to get an MRI. Mm-hmm. Who wants to wait that long to figure out what's wrong with
them? Especially if you got
so
an impingement or something.
It really
like
is. And just being, you know, I'm a nurse. I've been a nurse for 25 years. And when I hear all of these things from the legal side, once I got onto the medical legal side, and hearing all these restrictions on how insurance companies dictate care, and just, you know, the panel providers and just the way that a client is being viewed as they come in, that they're a malingerer or they just, you know, they're drug seeking or they're not really hurt. Like your arm has to fall off before you get, you know, a CAT scan or MRI. And it's just, it's so sad when I see
that.
That
even crosses over to the personal injury attorneys, right? Like we're the ambulance chasers.
You know,
like there's always this negative connotation
because
people don't realize how we are helping people.
Yeah, not only, I had an attorney, I was doing a podcast with him. He was running for office in Philly and he said, I'm not sure if I'm proud of what I do. I looked at him and this is a fact. I'm like, are you crazy? You donate your time to somebody. There's no out-of-pocket cost. You're going to go a minimum of a year, maybe two, without making a dime.
It's sometimes even longer, yeah.
And even longer. And, you know, and you invest in the case. At what point, at what point are you not somebody's hero, that you're taking somebody who could not afford your services under any circumstances? You're investing, and if you lose, which I know you've never, ever lost, Karen, but
I don't think I have.
You can't remember.
Well, I was going to say that,
and,
Joe.
And Deb also, but having said that, you don't get paid.
Yeah.
And so the point is, you know, but that's all insurance company stuff. What I was just going to say when you mentioned that, Amara, Flo doesn't mention that on a commercial.
Oh, no. Flo is just making,
you know,
everything
I mean?
Look
Flo
like peaches and cream.
Until you need her.
Right. Yeah, you know, exactly. They don't mention, you know that,
and the little Geico.
Yeah, oh, yeah, the little what's it, the Gecko?
Yeah, Gecko.
They're not mentioning
Geico? Wait, is it Geico or Gecko? Let's get this
we
out.
We need insurance.
I think Geico is a Gecko.
Geico
right.
is
the
a
Gecko.
The
Gecko mascot might be a Gecko.
Right.
I'm not really
and
sure.
And Joe, I think that's one of the like great things about our firm is because we have such strong Jersey presence and such a strong Pennsylvania and Philly presence. Like Deb and I have conversations all the time when people get injured going, hey, is it better for them to go under Jersey PIP? Is it better? Can we do Pennsylvania PIP? Is this a New Jersey workers' comp case because we have a big New Jersey comp department? Or should we keep it in Philly depending on, you know, the
what's
injury?
Best,
so
right.
We do it, you know, we can figure out what's best for the client, like in-house. So
well, now
the other thing I want to just point out real quick,
sure,
Joe,
please.
Sorry. You know, there's good doctors, there's bad doctors. There's good lawyers, there's bad lawyers. There's good teachers, there's bad teachers.
We don't have bad lawyers on the program.
No, no, no. Well, that's my point. So Stark & Stark and Karen and Deb, I mean, you guys are the cream of the crop, right? So the thing is that is when you know when you hire one of these attorneys from this firm, you know you're getting the best representation. And part of that, too, is how you vet cases of whether or not they're true cases. You're not going to sit there and say, oh, sure, yeah, I'll represent you, and representing, like, pardon the expression, but crap that somebody throws to the wall to see if something sticks. You guys are looking at this from an objective standpoint, an analytical standpoint.
Absolutely.
Saying, so you know when you're in front of a judge and they know your reputation, building a reputation and relationships, they know when I saw Deb and when I saw Karen, like, this is a legitimate case. How much does that impact what you do every day?
Yeah, I agree. I say that to people all the time. And honestly, we probably reject more cases than we take just because we would rather be upfront with someone from the get-go than to kind of string them along. And then, you know, 2 years later be like, oh, you know, sorry, that didn't work out. You know, we are investing time. But more importantly, you don't want to put someone through that in their life. I mean, it's not pleasant going through a lawsuit. I mean, you know, they get the other side digs into your personal life, your medical history. I mean, it's not fun.
They will film you.
Yeah, they'll film you. So, I mean, it's very intrusive.
Talk, and along those lines, Mara, talk about how important it is. You mentioned Stark and Stark, okay? It's, you know, I've been to the facility. It's a, you know, incredible firm, and but you also have the resources to fight that, to fight those insurance companies.
That's a really good point.
You know, so you're not nobody's, you know, you're not walking in and trying, you know, you're going to go, they know you're willing to go to court for your client. You can fight them with every dollar every unlimited dollar that the insurance company has to try to break the client. You can go right back at them and fight them to the end. How important is that, and important is that for the insurance company to know, okay, well, we know these guys are going to, they're going to go the distance if they have to.
I think that's one of the most important things that, you know, our reputation gets us. And not only do we, you know, the court and the people in general that we deal with know that we're good lawyers, but they also know that we'll fight for our clients. And our clients know that we fight for them. You know, we don't, there are arguments that we don't leave on the table that other people would. One of the best compliments I ever got was leaving a trial, and the sheriff's officer looked at me and shook my hand, and she said, I never saw anybody fight for another person like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
And you know what? We have the ability to do that because there's no one in our firm that questions when we want to spend money on a case or hire an expert or do the things that you need to do to develop a case that insurance companies rely on. Sure. The fact that smaller firms won't do that. You know, they won't be able to fund a case.
Mm-hmm. A lot of smaller firms will send you the case.
They do.
They
know that
they
happens a lot. I was just going to say that, we have a lot of people that send us cases just because of that reason, because we have, the resources to go that extra mile.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing Marlton, Yardley, New York, Philadelphia, Bridgeton, and Woodstown.
Yes.
A lot of locations here.
Yeah. And I mean, it's impressive. And what about the resources that you have? You're two attorneys that are from a massively successful firm, and you're both on air and given different perspectives of success. But how about having resources like one another and the other 50 to 100? How many attorneys are with the firm? I mean,
about 100.
Yeah, there's about 100 now.
Okay, so you got 100 attorneys. That has to be a lot of resources. There's not much that has run across that. Those doors that one of the attorneys hasn't seen, is that a good resource to have that amount of knowledge in the same, organization?
We say we're always learning. So we do like even in-house CLEs because, it's just
we teach each other all the time.
We teach each other all the time. Uh-huh. I'm sure you guys do it in your business too. Like you go to another radio host and you're like, "Oh, they did it that way." Let me know.
I don't know anything.
Wait, I know it all. Okay, so let's just get that straight.
What am I going to do? She just brought that up. I'm texting her right now, going, I don't know what to do.
Yeah,
but I always say the best teachers are the best learners.
Yeah,
and the best learners are teachers because you really need to. So just even when you look at a school teacher. They're learning from the students.
Oh yeah.
They're learning something new. Like when you throw a new agenda or, something instructional, things change all the time. And one of the things I always try to teach my own kids too is to evolve with change. So what may have been appropriate 5 years ago in your practice, now there's new legislation that may have changed that, but maybe one of your partners hit that before or saw it, had a case.
Absolutely.
And they're sharing it with you.
Every single day that happens.
So valuable.
Right. I mean, every day.
Mm-hmm. And it's sometimes as simple as an email. Like I'll just shoot Dev an email like, hey, have you ever had this happen in your case? And we're having a conversation, or do you know an expert who can deal with this? Mm-hmm. And she's like, yeah, I use this person across the country. Here's the name, mm-hmm. So the resources are invaluable, but I would say our firm is definitely focused on our continual learning. Cause like you said, Marla, you need to be up on everything.
To evolve. Yeah.
You need to evolve.
As professionals, as a firm, as a whole. Mm-hmm. When I look at the medical field, it's a constant. I'm always looking to see what new medications are out and being in pharmacy and, understanding the different drug classes and how they work. And it's changing every day. So some of our go-to drugs, you know, 10 years ago are just even off the market right now, mm-hmm. you know, or have been off the market. So I think that that's a really important thing to constantly evolve and adapt to change. And I have to ask this one question. So, Joe, I hope I'm not making you feel, you know, a little odd.
Well,
today.
We had the guy in.
I got to ask this question.
We had the male
here.
Health doctor in.
All right.
And it was almost nothing I haven't covered.
I had to sit through erectile dysfunction. I had to sit through an hour of erectile dysfunction testosterone.
You
so I'm,
that
I'm capitalizing right now. Okay?
Might me cringe. We talked to about an hour of that, so
yeah.
if it's
well,
any...
we had to go to break six times because, yeah, him and I were the straight
well, because we kept saying things like, it's really hard to talk about something
yeah,
like that.
And,
next
yeah.
thing you know, we're like, oh, my God.
And your other comment, ahead. Too, but I'll leave that one off the table. That was
go
bad.
Ahead.
So as women, and I know this because of our field, when I say our field, personal injury, medical, and law, you know, it's a predominantly male... rant. I don't even know, like to say
male,
like
male oriented.
There you go. Oriented.
That's a great question.
Yeah. You know, what is the reaction a lot of times? Because I feel like sometimes when people don't understand who we are as people, to understand that we're strong, if not stronger than some male attorneys, no offense, anybody listening, but we're coming at you. And I just wanted to know, because I know what I deal with too on my side of things and dealing with, you know, a lot of males in our business, most of them are all respectful. You know, everybody's mm-hmm. like, okay, she's educated, she's smart, she presents herself well, she knows her stuff. How does that affect you? And what is your dynamic, even amongst your firm and to your clients? So like, male to female, I'm not putting you on the spot. I hope nobody from Stark & Stark is listening. But, you know, we're just dishing this out now.
No, but I think it's great.
That's a great question.
It is. I've talked to we've had this conversation, women in the law, I'm sure you and I have, Karen, and I've heard a number of, and I don't let the ladies talk about it, but what it makes me uncomfortable. It's ridiculous in today's day and age.
Mm-hmm.
When I've been in on a show one time where one male attorney said something to a female, it just was ridiculously,
it's,
you know.
It's so ridiculous.
An innuendo I'm looking yeah. at. And I'm you know, I'm an iron worker, you know, I mean, I came up rough and tumble, but that's just not, you know, I mean, you know, get with the ages, man. This isn't 1950. And even then it was obviously wrong. But talk about that, because that's, you know, I mean, that's got to be, you know, something you've dealt with in the past.
Yeah. I mean, I think we still deal with it. I mean, as far as we've come,
it's pretty scrappy. So
yeah.
I think that
well,
that
listen,
helps.
Dev, after chasing down somebody who stole your pocketbook, I'm pretty sure you can hold your own. I mean, we heard that story when we went to break, that somebody robbed her handbag and she took off her heels and took off after the dude. Like,
that's
pretty.
Now.
It's amazing.
You admit to it?
No, listen,
no. It's a,
that's
it's
right.
a good story,
that's,
and I'm proud of you.
Absolutely.
Does he look
sometimes
like Dan? I want you to. Was that no joking, Dan? I'm just Dan's our producer.
But no,
he's a
I
good
mean,
man.
What I love about that, and you know, on the positive twist, that's incredibly heroic because your reaction was, "You're not going to do that to me." And whether or not you finish through with running and getting your bag back or any of that, it's so irrelevant. The point that I'm making is, as an attorney, your first reaction is to fight. You didn't run and go hide in a corner, and that's just character. I mean, that's, you know.
Talk about that.
So good. Yeah.
Yeah. Both in depositions and in the courtroom.
Yeah, Deb's right. You know, I think we're both kind of scrappy and have
feisty,
grit, you know,
right?
And feisty that way. But it is also a balance, right? Because you balance between just the stereotype of being a bitch one day, mm-hmm. and sorry,
that's all
right. Right button now.
But then the other day you're aggressive, right? So you always have to kind of, you know, kind of do that balance. But you know, we see it every day. We're as trial attorneys, there's not very many female trial lawyers. There
not
just
on
isn't.
The plaintiff side, especially. There's a lot on the defense. I have a lot of defense trial lawyer friends, mm-hmm. but I think we're sort of a very unique breed.
What about innuendos, insulated? Like, for example, honey and stuff like that? And I've heard countless women attorneys say to me, well, they asked me if I was the court reporter when I came in.
Yeah,
some
that happens all
stuff.
The time. There are some male attorneys, too, that in the beginning of trial or at some designated time, they'll say something inappropriate or do something inappropriate to kind of throw you off your game. And that has happened to me on a number of occasions. Now, luckily, it's, you know, I've been doing this for a long time, and, you know, I've...
Nice try, Charlie.
I've always been a woman, so...
You're not going to shake me in my boots.
Yeah, so you learn mm-hmm. how to deal with it, you know, and it's kind of, at some point, it becomes funny. I remember there was a time when I first started, I used to think, you know, I can't wait until I get gray hair because then people will may respect me. Now I have gray hair and I dye it, but but it changes because, you know, as a young woman especially, I think it's difficult for people to take you seriously.
Absolutely.
And understand that you know, just because you're a woman doesn't mean that you're not the best person for the job.
Right.
Especially when you're a young attorney.
Yes.
Even if you're
young male attorneys.
I mean, somebody's 27
true.
Years old, you walk in there,
you're
okay.
Like, okay.
We got a rookie here. But the reality is, what about mentors? You know, when you come in, you know, I imagine as a young man, doesn't matter, but.
But wait, hold on.
Anybody,
let me
but
back
as
up.
A young woman coming into this
mentors
field,
are
how,
so important.
How important is
yeah.
that?
But wait, let me back up real quick. Just so I can clarify what I was saying by having a young attorney or even as far as to say a young physician. Because, you know, sometimes like a doctor will walk in a room that's a specialist and they, you know, they're 30 years old and you're looking at them like, oh, there's no way that this guy is going to know anything. He's not old enough to have the experience as a doctor. The positive side of that is this 30-year-old is knowing the cutting-edge medicine,
that's right.
Whereas some of these doctors who are attending physicians in the hospital doing rotation and are 16, 65 are worried about getting to their boat, they're vacationing. They don't care about looking back to see what the new or looking forward what the new research is,
like
the new
school.
Medicines.
They're old school.
Right.
Yeah, good point.
So that balance is, you know, important.
But,
yeah.
but I mean – When you know what you went through, I mean, any in particular mentors that were women that you know, okay, you're young, and you're going through it, okay, in the male-oriented, dominated world, you know, back then and even now, obviously, anybody in particular that said, you know, you can do this? Your mom would be somebody that would be.
Yeah, I was just gonna say.
Your mom would be.
Joe, knowing my family, so my mom was always the person who. Like I was on a boys baseball team, like when I was from like 8 to 14 until like, mm-hmm. you know, then I realized I really wasn't supposed to be on a boys baseball team. Maybe.
Right.
But she was always like, you can do whatever they can do and put me in those situations.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, you know, our firm doesn't have a lot of female lawyers at the equity shareholder level, and we're working on that. So for Deb and I, we were lucky enough to have mentors in our firm. Actually, who were men?
I was going to say it doesn't have to be a woman, but
yeah.
I mean somebody.
Yeah.
You know.
I know, but my mom is definitely someone, and my dad as well. But
yeah, absolutely. I agree with Karen. So I have to give my mom some props on this because mm-hmm. I remember being in high school and I wanted to take the typing class, and there was another class I wanted to take, and she wouldn't let me. She was a secretary, and she was like, "I don't want you to do that. You're going to do these other things. I want you to take math. I want you to take calculus."
Mm-hmm.
And her little tagline used to be, "You can do anything a boy can do, and you can do it better."
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
It's a good tagline.
But I did have some phenomenal mentors in my life, especially from Stark, and Joel mm-hmm. Rosenberg is one of them.
Wow. Yeah.
Marta, how about you? Because you're very much a success,
a
business owner and all those things.
All my partners are men. And it's pretty much always been that way since I got in pharmacy. And I have to say, they are very respectful. In fact, sometimes they're like, oh, here she comes. Like, you know, I come in the meeting and
I wouldn't mess with Marla.
The heavy on my opinion. But I appreciate that because I'm respectful to them. They're very respectful to me as well. And the one thing, though, because it kind of just blends in with stereotyping, too.
Sure.
So being a cheerleader for the NFL for as many years as I was there, I hardly ever tell anybody that. And I don't tell them about the pageant background or any of those things because people make this assumption that I have no brains and I'm an airhead. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're like, oh, well, who's this girl coming in? Oh, she was a cheerleader. And then I come in and they're just kind of blown away. Yeah, I have smarts. I have degrees. I have, you know, a world of knowledge. It wasn't. Yes, that was one thing that I did. And I'm very proud of that. I continue to still do with the NFL alumni and tons of
by the way, before
events?
we talk about that event tomorrow.
Yeah, so I'm excited. So tomorrow at 10 o'clock on Good Day Philadelphia, Bob Kelly is going to be doing a special on us. We are going out to give over 300 backpacks and school supplies to the Holy Innocent School
that's Bristol
Street out in Juniata. So I'm so excited about that because those things make me really happy, you know, to give back. So, but
Marla, don't you think that the background as a cheerleader, don't you think that helped you become a confident person that could, you know, stand up in front of a group of people and do what you needed to do to get attention?
Absolutely. I think, you know, getting out in front of 70,000 people was definitely... That
Eagles
was like
fans.
Eagles fans, by the
way. Seen, we probably can't even imagine. I'm sure we were all amongst the fans, but just I've never seen the fans looking at that view.
But it's an adrenaline rush. I mean, I could do that. Before I could go in church and sit in a pew with 100 people around, I'm like, oh, my God, get me out of here.
This has been the fastest hour on radio. It's been amazing. We're at the end of the end of the show. Before we bid everyone adieu, Karen O'Donnell, contact information at the firm.
So Stark & Stark, and the number is 267-907-9600. And if you want me, it's extension 13.
Deborah Dunn?
It's, again, Stark & Stark in the Marlton office, and my number is 856-874-4443. My direct extension is 4425.
Awesome. Marla Vitero, take us home.
Yeah, so I just want to thank you guys so much for coming and being here. We want to thank you on behalf of Synergy Pharmacy. Our website is synergyscripts.com, serving all of your workers' compensation and personal injury needs. We are here for you, for your clients, and I want to thank you guys for the opportunity to sit down with us today.
Awesome.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the ProtoPro, Marlon Vitarello. Of course, I want to thank Karen O'Donnell and Deb Dunn for being fantastic guests, and certainly for honoring those who were impacted so much by 9/11.
Yes, we'll be praying tonight.
Absolutely. We're sponsored by Synergy Pharmacy. On behalf of Marlon Vitarello, and Karen O'Donnell and Deborah Dunn, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening.